States. And I am now working on his seventh book. And all of his books have been in print for 30 years, and every one of them remains in print and continues to sell.
In January, we interviewed Kshama Svant, one of the few socialists to hold elected office in the country. She's an economics teacher and former Occupy Wall Street activist who was elected to Seattle City Council after she ran on a campaign to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour. We asked Svant why she decided to run as a socialist.
The important thing about running as a socialist is, you know, for one, to show that there is a definite openness for clear alternatives, not only to the big business parties, but the system that they represent, the capitalist system. And if you look at recent polls, they show that people, especially young people, are much more open to socialism than you would find out from the corporate media. People are also fed up with the political dysfunction.
That is the new socialist city, Seattle City Council member, Kshama Svant, Michael Smith. And also, well, as we wrap up, because we have less than a minute right now, when people say you choose democracy or you choose capitalism, the contradiction in that.
Capitalism is incompatible with democracy. Fascism is compatible with capitalism, but not democracy and capitalism don't go in. We can see that trend. We did a book, Michael Ratner wrote the introduction on Bill Kunstler's writings, one of the founders of the Center for Constitutional Rights, and we called it the emerging police state. And people said, well, it's a little over the top, you know, but it's exactly what's happening. And as Juan points out in his chapter, we either develop some socialist leadership and build a left-wing alternative here, or we're going to have fascism. That's the direction things are going in. So imagine living in a socialist USA will help people get from where we are to where we want to be.
We want to thank you both for being with us. Frances Golden, literary agent. She was the literary agent for Adrienne Rich. She's for Barbara Kingsolver, Mumia Abu-Jamal, housing actress for over 60 years. And she will be turning 90. I understand it. We were making you a little older than you were in June. And so we wish you a happy pre-birthday. Michael Smith, thanks so much for being with us as well. Co-editors of Imagine, Living in a Socialist USA. That does it for the broadcast. Yes.
This is WHFR Dearborn. And now it's time for our special radiothon edition of the new WHFR Journal, local news and alternative views. Welcome to a Radiothon 2014 edition of the new WHFR Journal. Yes, we are taking your pledges, 313-845-9676, only once a year. Our independent, non-commercial, all-volunteer student and alumni staff radio station asks for your pledge of support. Any amount would be great. We do have special pledge incentives for $30, $52, and so on. In fact, we give a lot more than most other stations do, by the way, at those levels. But this hour is going to be a special interview with Mayor John B. O'Reilly Jr. This is, and there he is at the front door. So he's on his way in. We will get him situated and begin in just a moment. Let me just say the phone number that our program director, Mark Hall, will get is 313-845-9676. Now, just so I have a chance to greet the mayor and get the headphones for him, we're going to listen to a two-minute commentary about the psychic pain of being rich. And come on, get your compassion and sympathy rolling here, and then we'll start our interview with Mayor John B. O'Reilly, Jr.
One thing about the Tea Party Republicans in Congress is that they do know who butters their biscuits. Several have recently rushed forward with an anguished plea in defense of Wall Street barons, CEOs, and billionaires. Stop the vilification of wealthy people, is their cry. a crusade to protect pampered plutocrats from having to hear the public's scornful words about them is not likely to draw much support from, well, from the public. Still, it is true that being a one percenter is not an easy burden to shoulder. Yes, they do have money and power, but don't you see? They never have enough. If your sense of self-worth is tied up in your net worth, then what if your net is comparatively small? It's important for us riffraff to realize that there are the rich, and then there are the rich. The relativity of status within the 1% creates enormous stress, even feelings of wealth inadequacy. They're constantly thinking, is his bigger than mine? Imagine if you had to live with that. Perhaps you didn't know, but the average household income for the 1% as a whole is a mere $1.26 million a year. Okay, that's rich, but it's not rich. For that honorific, you have to step it up many notches and climb into the elite class of the richest one-tenth of one-percenters. Their average household wealth is $6.37 million a year. Now that's money. Yet, it's not enough. Those elites are looked down on by an even thinner slice of net worthies, the royal class of the richest 1/100th of 1%ers. This is the stratosphere where the richy richest of the rich dwell, making ends meet on an average household income of $31 million a year. This is Jim Hightower saying, come on, people, have some feeling for the psychic pain of those who are struggling to keep up with the 1/100th of 1%. It's a tough world up there.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at hightowerlowdown.org.
Well, how did you think about that Jim Hightower comment? Almost every Friday on the new WHOF Journal, we feature either Jim Hightower's commentaries or Jack Lessenberry, thanks to Michigan Public Radio. And I hope that they challenge your mind here on the new WHOF Journal. We're actually interested in challenging you with ideas, new ideas and new directions and getting better at what we do. It's all positive, but we're not just necessarily supporting the status quo here. So I'd like to introduce our special guest for today, and it's Mayor John B. O'Reilly Jr. Welcome, sir, to the studio again.
Hi, Jay. Glad to be here.
I'm glad you're back. So what roadways should we avoid out there in Belleville?
I was going down. Well, I had to go to a meeting in Sumter Township this morning, and it was one of those temporary fixes that are going on everywhere today.
Yeah, it wasn't an I-96 6-month backup that affected this time. Yeah. Well, again, we're great. It's great to have you in the studio. At least in terms of the city, most of the ice and snow has melted, right?
Oh yes. Yeah.
Okay. So have we mothballed the snow plows yet, or?
Well, not yet.
Never
I
know.
Mean, you have to be ready for anything. I mean, that's if nothing else, we learned this winter, be ready for everything.
I just did a survey of some of the Dearborn residents that were here in the student center as students in different programs this morning, and one of them brought up the fact that. Did the city really, I mean, there were requests out, did the city do anything to, like, force or fine businesses that didn't clear their sidewalks during the great snows of this last winter?
We tried to be, reasonable about going out, and it's really, we didn't, I think there may have been a few tickets written where there had been notice, and then they just simply still failed to get it done. It was quite challenging, and even for us, because in many of our business districts, the curbs, from the curb to the business is like 5 feet, 6 feet. And so, especially on Michigan Avenue, Ford Road, and so on, the big plow trucks from the county throw all their stuff on, and then if they've already plowed, it's undoes their work. Right. And if they haven't, they've got to take all that snow and put it somewhere, but they can't put it in the street. So we're working on actually this. You know, you learn from the extreme.
Oh, well, yeah.
So this winter, we've been analyzing a couple things, and we realize we need to have some equipment, which we haven't had to really do in the past, in some of our, along our business corridors. We're going to have to get some equipment where we can have a front loader that takes the snow, we put it in a truck, and take it out of the district, dispose of it somewhere else.
After a certain point, there's no more room for it. But also, after a couple of weeks, it builds up, and it becomes solid ice,
right,
which almost nobody can get off unless you had maybe a flamethrower or something, something that's probably illegal in Dearborn. Somebody actually mentioned they came to City Hall once and there was like a ton of ice in front of City Hall, but I would think. Well, have you had trouble over at City Hall keeping the?
No, I mean we get out there. We had originally, interestingly enough, and I'm not sure when they're referring to. We thought we would contract out the maintenance of the City Hall, which we had done, but we were unsatisfied with the results, and we went back to our own staff doing it. So it could have been in that interim, but you know, it's one of those things where it sounds good to contract out, but we found it wasn't as reliable as our own staff. And you have to make those choices, and that's happening everywhere.
So which day of the month was your day to shovel?
Oh, my day was every time it snowed at my house. Oh, yeah. I do all the shoveling at my
Christina
house.
Christina said, yeah. John, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. okay. Well, we had fun with that. Okay. I'd like to, I think, cover first the ongoing news that we've covered here on the new WHFR Journal for the last couple of weeks. Did I mention my name is Jay Koronick? If you listen to this show, and I hope you do, I'm the usual host, and John Conroy is with me here. But in the news, and there was some real dispute from certain residents, I think even from Access Representative, too, about Severstal's request to the Michigan Department of Environmental Quality to allow them to pollute more, actually to pollute as much as they had been doing, but didn't. There's something wrong with the criteria that they said. Now, the city has really no play in this discussion, right. Unfortunately, right?
Right. Well, we're interested in the outcomes and interested, obviously, in health and air quality. But that's maintained. There are air quality sensors all through that area because of the nature of the businesses there. And then the county is the first review on that, and then the state gets involved. So that's the thing. So in this case, when Severstal came in and took over from Ford Rouge went bankrupt, they bought it, they came in, there were standards set up, and it was relatively new, and I think what's happening is they're saying that the standards are artificially low and the state is reviewing that, and then they've got to look at data and what the data, you know, what the data shows, because they, you know, the thing is there are sensors, so there's data right. That can be analyzed.
And they have been given some sort of tickets or warnings for about 5 to 8 different times in the last several years for going over what those limits were. But so it's a question of were those limits appropriate somehow or accurate or necessary. Of course, remember, folks, the opinions on this show are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford Community College. So when I say that I think every bit of additional pollution is bad, I mean, there should be some way to be, I don't care what the low standard is of safety, I want it to be as less as possible. Most people know that you shouldn't have too many x-rays unless you're really essential, and all the various health issues that any additional pollution of air, water, or food is probably not good for you, and unless it really can be proven over a 20-year period of time. And pollution is good. I'd love to see that. It takes me to the next connection with Severstal. Are they going to get their name on the new City Hall?
Well,
for a mere $8.5 million.
Well, it's actually that isn't all going to the City Hall, and you know, it's going to a couple different things. But that's part of a resolution going back to this is when they took over in 2005. There were a lot of issues outstanding. There were issues that went back to the Ford Rouge steel facility prior to their being there. There were some valuation issues. All these things. And they wanted to have everything resolved when they came in. They wanted to have a global, agreement on a number of issues, and state was involved with this. I mean, you know, this was a big thing.
Including tax incentives too, which were granted to them. Yes.
Well, the same as Ford gets and others get. I mean, that became the. You know, we can talk about personal property tax and getting rid of it, but that became the norm only because it was like, if you didn't do it, they're going to go somewhere else.
Right. That's just, I've said on this show, and who's going to change the laws, but it's like bribery or blackmail. I even remember somebody from Ford Motor Company about 20 years ago saying, if we don't get this latest discount incentive tax exemption, we can just move the headquarters anywhere.
Right.
Forget about being Henry Ford's birthplace. That doesn't matter. We're a global company. We can move to Australia, you know. And that wasn't an official statement. That was, but it seems like I would love to have the federal government pass a rule that no city or state can give an exemption to anybody or an incentive. Sure, some states will have higher taxes, but it should be fair for all the businesses, I think, because it only hurts the local communities, and there's that blackmail sort of thing, too. So in my opinion, and I'm not suggesting it's your opinion at all, is that they've already got us a big discount, that $8.5 million or whatever figure. Wasn't that supposed to go to, like, a conference center, actually, in the middle of Dearborn, originally?
No.
Oh, okay.
That was to resolve it. So let me finish this, and then if you really want to have that discussion about incentives, that's a good one. It's a real good one.
That could go on for hours.
We can cover what's happening in Michigan, because it's a big change. But with regard to the issue, so in 2005, there was an agreement made amongst all the parties, which included the bankruptcy court and everyone, and the city agreed, or what had been proposed and agreed to, was that Severstal would enter into profit sharing with the city going forward for a period of years through 2018. So that was what was in the agreement, and it went forward that way. But in about 2008 or 2009, when they were looking at certain situations, they felt that their attorneys were the ones who initiated and said, we think that profit sharing probably isn't the right thing when you're dealing with a local municipality because of the way they have regulatory authority, different things like that. So they wanted to find an alternative. At that point, the Hyatt Regency was still the Hyatt Regency, had the same owners, and we had a lot of information about how a regional conference center might be a really good thing for driving the local economy. They read about that. And they said, how about, and we actually entered into an agreement in 2009 that instead of the profit sharing, which we didn't really get much anyway, that they would donate $8.5 million, which is really naming rights. We used the same thing we did with the Ford Historic Property. So it was agreed that they would give $8.5 million for the conference center, and then they would have naming rights. And so that was what we agreed to. So we had a two-year period to do that. Well, in the meantime, the Hyatt couldn't stay because the new owners couldn't negotiate with them, because the property was put into bankruptcy by the old hotel owners. Everything went south. So that contract expired. So it's now expired. So we're back to profit sharing, because by its own terms, that two-year period at the end, if we hadn't executed anything, then it would go back. So that's where we are. And that's how we started. They asked about this project we're doing, and could they participate in that?
Well, I just and I know some of the $8.5 million currently is talked about as going to art space for renovation of the old city hall or something towards their activity anyway.
Right.
And so the city would only get about $5 million or so.
Right. Well, there's also a Veterans Park, which we would put. So there's I think $1.5 million for the Veterans Park, and there's $1.6 million for the.
That was the other amount I didn't add up. Yes.
Yeah, and that's the part that's it's not for the conversion to housing for the buildings. It's for the property in between the two buildings that would be used for a lot of multi-purpose different things.
Okay. Well, I just again my straw poll, completely unofficial here, in the Student Center, Henry Ford Community College, no Dearborn resident wanted Severstal name on the new City Hall.
Well,
now I guess if it's like Severstal Conference Room or something, they wouldn't mind. But
right.
And it seems like that's still flexible to negotiation, but I mean, I wouldn't want Ford Motors' name on our City Hall either, except maybe Ford Building or something.
Well, but that's what we were talking about. It would be a recognition thing. Like, and again, I think
maybe people, a bronze plaque.
People have to be prudent, because you have to also have to say, well, look, and this is one of those compromises, but. At some point, either it's going to come out of the tax money or it's going to come out of another source.
It's hard to say no to the millions.
And I know we had some resistance when we were saying, well, the boards around the ice arena or other facilities, would we let somebody sponsor them? I'm going, hey, if that helps keep the cost down and it doesn't have to come out of the tax dollars, I mean, you could buy tickets to a very expensive event, sporting event, any other event, and you're going to be inundated with advertising even after you've paid for that pricey ticket. So, I mean, that's a reality of the market.
Well, we're going to move on to more topics with Mayor John B. O'Reilly Jr. here for the WHFR Journal for today. But just to remind you, this is our Radiothon Pledge Week. Once a year, we need your support. We're talking about money in Dearborn. We're talking about millions that are needed for one project or another. And taxes may need to be paid for them if they haven't been already. But here at WHFR, we just need $10, $20, $30, $50. We can get by on $10,000 total donation, believe it or not. Yeah, that's amazing. For a whole year, we've cut to the bone our expenses. The college still gives us a little bit of money from student user fees at the college. Nothing from the general fund. We get no money from the state of Michigan or from the federal government for this operation. And we try to have, at least on this show anyway, significant guests. Mayor O'Reilly, okay, only once a year, sorry. But you do have a cable channel, you know, you can use. And 2 weeks ago, we had George DeRaney, our local representative, representative on, and so we keep the issues and ideas alive here, and you can listen anytime, you know, online, not just on Fridays. So consider a generous pledge. Our phone number live in the studio now, which will be taken by our people in Studio B, Caroline and Mark are ready to jump on your phone call. 313-845-9676, option one, live studio. They're live, okay, in our sister studio here, and they will pick it up and take your pledge and tell you what the pledge incentives are. You can also pledge with a credit card online, our website, whfr.fm. Just click on the Radiothon 2014 button right in the middle, and all your different incentive items, if you need any, are right there. Now, in fact, one of them is a special gift we're giving to Mayor O'Reilly. It is our new stainless steel mug. He's showing it to the lack of cameras here. And it is stainless steel, even though it's metallic blue. So, hey, we don't give away junk here at WHFR. We try to have unique programming. Please support us. 313-845-9676, option one, or the website whfr.fm. Thanks. Back to Mayor O'Reilly here. He's caught his breath. Council approved on April 1st, a little while back, $5.5 million for the new City Hall renovation, administrative services building renovation. But as I was reading to the end there, it's relocation costs too, like moving right. things you already have to down there. But that won't be all the cost. There's still, I think Councilman Tefelsky asked about a connecting road in the back, maybe yep. being built if needed. Apparently, IT and security. IT means all the computer stuff or upgrades of the wiring and so on. So there's still going to be
no. That's already that's in there.
Oh well, one in the paper it quoted someone saying
well, that doesn't mean
IT and security was still coming.
No, that doesn't mean it's accurate. It means that that's what their opinion is.
Okay,
you know
that's why we asked them in at the time.
That's right. That's the reality check okay. here. We're going to have full capability to occupy on based on what was approved.
Mm-hmm.
There is a road coming in. It's shared with Gaffari and Associates. It's been that way since it was constructed. Mm. We think it'd be more functional, and we always wanted to connect all of the buildings. I mean, the idea is to keep that campus idea so you can access from one to
kind
the other.
Kind of makes sense. You don't have to go back to Michigan Avenue.
So
right.
we have identified a cost for putting the road in, and it's part of also the cost of doing the Veterans Park because it will run at the edge of that.
Mm.
So that cost is deferred because we don't need it to make the move, and the art space need to get into the building to begin their project in order to meet the requirements of their federal funding. They got $14 million of federal funding to do the conversions and so on, but they have a timetable they have to meet, so we're trying to accommodate that.
I'm just going to ask, what is that timetable right now, as best you can guess? I mean, the renovation has to be completed, and then the relocation has to be done.
Right.
Before the end of the year?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely before the end of the year, because they have their timetable is under the federal rules, they have to begin to have tenants in the building by the end of 2015. And they're gutting everything because they're taking out the entire infrastructure, which was needing upgrade anyway. They, mm-hmm. They're taking out all the mechanicals, everything, and putting in for 46 separate units, one to three bedroom. So it's going to be all new plumbing, electrical, everything for the residents there.
Mm-hmm.
But the building is we saw it and got National Historic Preservation designation for
the old City Hall.
Hall,
right?
Mm-hmm. So the City Hall will always look like City Hall on the right. campus. It'll have the same look forever. But it's the interior that's going to transform.
Sure. So they need that space, but they won't officially be opening until 2015 or
right.
after because there's a lot to do. What about the? I assume part of the $5.5 million, since the initial studies showed that the roof is leaking several spots. There's going to be roof repair done on the new facility.
No, that's just
not really.
Again, there are people who make up stuff because they're trying to shoot it.
Well, I'm not talking about water leaks causing black mold. We already debunked that one.
There was a small issue with some water, but it's fine. There's no big cost there. The air conditioning units. This was a building used only for 10 years. It was occupied for 10 years after it was built by Ford Land.
Okay.
So it's in very good shape given condition of buildings. And it was well maintained because ADP, data processing, does all the payroll stuff and that. That was their building. So what it's really, the most of the cost is going for the transformation from that use to our use.
Okay. Well, you know, I hope it happens quickly and according to schedule. And, you know, whatever it takes, I know it's going to be a lot more user-friendly facility, certainly for the public. And not only is it sort of equidistant from east and west sides, but it... you know, that the visitors are all greeted at the beginning and directed to the right areas. I mean, it's a good plan, and it will certainly, I think the story said most recently that it will save the city approximately $400,000 in operating costs.
Yeah, at least. That's a minimum. So every year, year after year, we're reducing our operating costs because of the old City Hall and the fact that it just was designed in a different era. And to try and make it really energy efficient would have been a tremendous cost and probably not justified.
How's the new train station? Again, it's not a city issue directly. That's coming along.
Well, it is. The city owns
it. On schedule? So the city owns the property.
Yes. Well, we own the station.
You own the station.
We own everything.
Oh,
so,
my
I mean,
goodness.
It's ours. And just like we own the old Amtrak.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. We owned it. We leased it to Amtrak.
Oh, okay.
And that'll be the same thing here. Amtrak will operate in the interior, but we own it. And it's going great. I was just there for a site visit this past week, and it's going great guns. You know, they're putting in double rail now, so there's a lot of construction that's unrelated to the train station. It's going to be they're going to have a dual rail going all the way out to Wayne.
That required a delay of the original time to open.
Right.
So now sometime later in the fall, you think?
Yeah, we're on target. It'll probably be summer. Mm-hmm. It's really coming along, and it's amazing. You know, it's going to be quite a thing. And the thing is, when we actually put in for that shovel ready, we put it in and negotiated with Norfolk Southern. We didn't know that the state would end up buying that rail line from Norfolk Southern with federal money. We didn't know that they were going to move so quickly for high-speed rail. So within 2 years, you're going to have high-speed rail directly from Chicago to Dearborn. You're going to have commuter rail starting in 2015 on that leg. So it's going to really begin to be a much more traffic,
commuting
much more
to
density.
Ann Arbor, or
Ann Arbor to Detroit.
I heard of a Pontiac connection, but that would have to come out of Detroit.
That's the thing. The next station from us east is Detroit.
Oh, okay,
and that's where the M1 will be. Mm. So basically, by 2015, sometime late in 2015, you'll be able to get on in Dearborn, go one stop. I mean, it'll just straight down to the Boulevard and Woodward. Get on the M1 and go 8 stops down, you know, midtown, downtown.
Wow.
So for people who work downtown or want to go downtown, it's going to be a cost-efficient, easy system to use from Dearborn to go downtown. And then it'll also be a system going out to Ann Arbor. So in addition, Amtrak's going from 3 runs a day, you know, both ways, to 6. So that there's going to be 6 choices instead of 3. And then there'll be, in 2015, 4 regular runs that are commuter rails that are unrelated to Amtrak.
They're somehow going to find the money for that, because I heard that there could be more service even right now, but they have the cars, but they don't have the money for the people.
Well, that's the point. In 2015, the state has the money. It's already in the budget.
Oh, good,
they're
going to
do it. So that's why we
wonderful.
Know. So. And then if that commuter rail takes off as we think they will, because there'll be a station at Ann Arbor, a station but there'll be a one for the airport. So they've identified that they have a county building that will be dedicated as an airport stop, and there'll be a shuttle, then Dearborn, then Detroit, and Ypsilanti's the other one. So that'll be the first. But the Amtrak already goes from Detroit up to Royal Oak, and then it goes up to Troy, Birmingham, and then it goes up to Pontiac. That leg would be easy to add. So if we see enough activity on the commuter rail, then the commuter rail can be extended all the way up that chain, and that's going to really begin to offer alternatives.
So at least 2 big parties later this year sponsored by the city, one for the new City Hall opening day and one for the new train station, right? Okay, we're going to be there. Don't worry. And of course, if the train station moves away from its current location to the new location, what about the new animal shelter? They still have to raise millions of dollars.
They're working on it, and they're doing very well. But, yes, we've offered them the site, you know, the existing train station with all the parking, all the attached land, and the building, if they can fit it in, if they can work it in. And then we will meet their pledge, if they get to a certain threshold, then we'll put in $600,000
for
meeting it over. So the city's commitment to the new animal shelter is $1 million in total.
Well, it's such a wonderful operation, the way it's run with mostly volunteers, that is the Friends of the Dearborn Animal Shelter. Somewhere back, late 80s or the 90s, actually made an appeal to the city to manage it under contract to the city. And the city still provides some funding, but basically most of the operation is funded by what they raise. And they have a lot of well-organized people who have pledged donation time several times a month, and a lot of fun activities too. But it's always good, I think, for the animals of Dearborn, including the human ones, to have such a wonderful organization. So that might be a couple years away before they'd have the money and be able to build a new facility.
I think actually it's probably closer than that. Can't speak to them. I was on the president of the city council when we did that agreement, and it was basically, you know, the city still picks up the animals and all that, so that's a city function. Our ordinance officers do the outside work, and then we bring it to the shelter, and then from there on the Friends of the Animal Shelter are the ones who maintain everything from then on. And we've been in that relationship since probably 95, something like that. And it's worked very well. Just the number of animals, though, has been increasing so dramatically as people have, you know, either abandoned them or whatever has happened in the economy. And so the population of the shelter has grown over that period of time fivefold or more. I mean, it's really quite extraordinary.
Well, it's time for another Radiothon 2014 pledge pitch. We're talking to Mayor John B. O'Reilly Jr. today on the WHFR Journal. Let me ask you the direct question. This is, of course, National Volunteer Week in the United States, April 6th through 12th. Honest, folks, we didn't know it was also going to be our Radiothon exact dates, but it is. And we are an all-volunteer organization. That means everybody's unpaid except three part-time people, including myself, that are paid by Henry Ford Community College. No benefits, just part-time pay. And it's been that way since 1985. So let me just ask you for your comment in general, though, Mayor O'Reilly, about the value and the significance and the importance of nonprofit organizations in Dearborn and their volunteer help.
Well, it's essential. You know, the city provides basic services, but quality of life is determined by the willingness of volunteers to be engaged in so many different ways, in actually delivering services, in putting together programs, in raising money. But if you think of in our sports programs, I mean, almost all of that is volunteer. The city supports them with administrative costs and facilities, but we couldn't run them if it weren't for volunteers. We couldn't. In the arts, across the board, in almost every quality of life issue, senior programming, I mean, everything, the city just could not finance them. It's that we can support, but it's volunteers that make everything work. And it's across the board. I mean, whether it's something related to the city or whether it's clubs and organizations that add value and assist people in the community through their through their efforts. So Dearborn is blessed because we have such a large volunteer pool, and we have people who so consistently come out. But without it life would not be the same as it is. There's no doubt about it.
And to help WHFR and our volunteer staff continue broadcasting, you know, our signal is, big 270 watts, and we cover, 8 to 10 mile range. That's most all of Dearborn, except for certain interference zones. But, so we are the city radio station, even though we're licensed to Henry Ford Community College. And we have talk shows like the Journal and the Tuesday Forum that we do every week locally to keep you informed of what's going on. And public service announcements. We do four of those every hour about local events in the community. So you're always finding out about the city. And so if you can make a pledge of support right now, we'd love to have it. And we do have people that will take the call in our sister studio, Studio B here, 313-845-9676. Option one, live studio, but because we're talking to Mayor O'Reilly here, we're not going to pick it up here, but it'll be picked up in our sister studio. And yes, they're waving at me. They're ready for your call. 313-845-9676, option one. Please make a generous pledge of support to WHFR Radio. We only ask once a year, for Pete's sake. All right, back to Mayor O'Reilly. Okay. Well, it's very important. We want to take time, so we might as well do it now. Personal property tax, which is really not for individuals but for businesses, is going to be gone, has been voted to be done away with by the state legislature. Is it next year or 2016? It's going to be totally...
2016 is the formal date.
But we need some answer because that's, providing... $10 million to the city now?
Yeah, it's a little more than that. It's about 15% of our total budget.
Well, the state of Michigan has come up with something they've put on the August ballot. For some reason, legislators, I guess they can't make official a new tax, or at least they were too chicken to do it. I don't know. But so they put it on the August ballot, and I think they really want the voice of the people. Why don't they put it on the November ballot? But maybe they couldn't wait or something, or maybe there's a better chance of passing in August. I don't know the politics of it. It's always politics. But my understanding is what they have proposed as a replacement, and it's confusing to me who's actually paying it, is really only about 80% restoration.
No, that was
or is it going to be equal to what we're getting now?
Yes.
Okay.
There's been a lot of change, and it's kind of an interesting background because Dearborn with Ford Motor Company played a pretty big role in this. Back in spring of 2011, I meet regularly with people from Ford, and one of the people in Ford said, "Hey, you know, they're really looking at getting rid of personal property tax." Now it's been debated for decades, so I mean, this has been on the agenda.
Yeah.
So. I said, well, what are they looking at doing? They said, well, they're looking at either straight line, you know, reduction as Ohio did or something else. And I said, well, the one thing is you're going to, a lot of communities, this would be devastating. So we talked about it, and we said, you know, what we really need to do is make sure that we protect full funding for police, fire, ambulance, that kind of thing. That can't be compromised. So Ford Motor Company and the city of Dearborn approached the governor's office and said, when you're talking about PPT, we'd like you to talk about guaranteed 100% funding for at least these things, and Ford came in as a business saying we got to do that. So we came up with a special assessment that was actually our invention, where all the personal property taxpayers who got the relief would be assessed a fee just for replacement of police, fire, ambulance services, and they added jails, but that wasn't in the original thing. And so that got put in the 2012 version. So in the 2012 version that passed the 11th hour of the 11th minute of the 11th hour, whatever it was, that version had 80% replacement of everything. But
that's what I knew of.
And then that. Well, they knew that wasn't a final version, so they passed that to have a placeholder and set the timetables in place. And then they've worked ever since, and Ford Motor Company and Dearborn have been involved in the discussions, coming up with this last solution. But as it turned out, which was really surprising, they could identify enough revenue to do 100% replacement, so there will be no loss of revenue.
Now,
it's coming out of three sources. One of the sources is expiring tax credits. The administration before the current administration had issued
in Lansing,
issued a bunch of tax credits, and those credits are available up to a certain time, and they're upon call. If you do certain things, you can you're eligible. Well, they know they're going to have a lot of money left, and that's what they've been budgeting all this. So they see that money as one of the sources they're going to use for this replacement. The other is going to be assigning a portion of the use tax. So you have 6% use tax and 6% sales tax. The use tax goes into the general fund now. And they said, we can assign. And the reason they wanted to do this is they didn't want the legislature every year to be up to allocating or taking action to distribute the money.
Get something
they
in place.
They wanted automatic. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they've transformed an existing state authority to be the state authority to distribute the money. The use tax would be then assigned. A certain percent of that use tax will be assigned to the authority. The tax credit monies that were originally going to tax credit will be assigned to the authority. And the collection statewide of the money from the corporate partners who are paying for police, fire, and ambulance on a special assessment will also go into that kitty. So every year that'll happen automatically, and it won't be subject to appropriation. So that's the model. And that's a pretty, I mean, the local governments and everybody's saying we want a constitutional change. But when you get into that, it complicates things, especially because then people say, well, if we're going to do that, let's add this, we'll do it. So there was a concern in Lansing and about whether we do it that way. But what people have to understand is, at this point, what they're voting on is a Headley override, basically, that
okay,
you can't establish a
called.
New tax. But
right.
it's basically going to be language that says that they agree that this process can happen, one I described. And it's interesting because it has the support of all the local government entities and all the business entities. And the reason is this. Personal property tax has been around since 1893. It came in when we passed local government. The first tax, the first statewide tax in Michigan was local taxation, and that's it.
Okay.
But, of course, a lot has changed since 1893. And so the problem we had is that it was a disincentive for large companies to invest in high-tech equipment because they would be paying a huge tax on that equipment based on its original value. Plus, the idea of evaluating sometimes what is special equipment that was designed specifically for a particular application. So the process became cumbersome. In the most cases, they were going up to the tax tribunal. You know, both parties, the local government and the taxpayer, disagreed, so it didn't go up there. It would take 4 years to find out. I mean, if you started in 2000, it would be 2004 or later before you actually found out what that tax value should have been, and then you're back at it the next year. So it was a cumbersome system. But when you suggested about not giving them, let me give you one example specific to Dearborn, because this is really important. When the Ford Rouge plant, the original plant, was tired and really had outlived its utility, there was Bill Ford Jr. wanted to rebuild the Ford Rouge plant. But Jack Nasser, who was the chair, he was the president of the company, he had no interest. In fact, he really had a disposition to go offshore with everything. He thought that, that manufacturing in the U.S. was too costly and so on. So
maybe that's what I remember. Yeah.
So there was a big split there in the company as to what to do. And so, you know, Ford approached us and said, look, and Mayor Guida was mayor at the time, and I was president of council. And they came to us and said, we got to do something here. We got to work through this and make this work. That was the example. I mean, if we had said, no, we're not going to work with you, we're not going to approve these legal, the incentives are legal under the law, but they're voluntary. If we're not going to do that, then that F-150 might have been built offshore, and we wouldn't have seen the incredible investment. And, of course, Bill Ford went way beyond just rebuilding the plant. He made it the most environmentally friendly manufacturing facility in the world, at least at that time I know it was. So for Dearborn to host that and have tours and have it connected to the, but the incentive was an element.
Okay.
We're getting rid of incentives, so that's the thing.
Okay, but so it is, can anybody be against this proposal on the August ballot? It's an override of the Headley Amendment. I know some tax people will say, well, Headley is our saving grace, and we'll never approve of that, although Dearborn Heights people voted just for themselves. They voted an override in order to keep their city going.
Did Dearborn.
And so did Dearborn, of course, which will expire in 2016?
2017.
2017, yeah. No sooner, please. in terms of our budget. But other than the generic idea of, we're overriding a protection against higher taxes, it won't actually be any higher taxes for, let's say, the residents of Dearborn if this is passed, and it won't be any more money for the businesses either?
No. Actually, the businesses will be paying the special assessment.
This new one,
they're still
yes.
paying an assessment, but it's a big savings for them. And it won't be a disincentive to buy new equipment. Which right. is the thing that we're
which is why
to.
Everybody's in favor of this, because
right.
the businesses are coming out better, even though there's no personal property tax, but we're getting, at this point, 100% of the funding that we had been expecting.
Right.
That's not true with Michigan revenue sharing, though. That's been a bug for years and years and years. Is that continue to be cut, or it's just much diminished from what it used
well,
to be?
Well, the new plan is a disaster, and it means that what we have in Lansing is nobody knows how we got where we are, or cares, and they've all forgotten the history, because everybody forgets that revenue sharing is a product of the states adopting sales tax as a state tax.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, prior to the state collecting sales tax, local governments collected sales tax. Dearborn did, Detroit, of course, all over the state. Communities that had a lot of commerce would have a sales tax as part of it, because that was to help pay the cost of all the people that were coming to do business in the city. Mm-hmm. You had to provide police, fire, ambulance, all that stuff for them. So sales tax was in common use. Well, they didn't want to have that duplicity. So the proposal for the people who are advocates for sales tax statewide is the state will collect the tax, then we'll redistribute back to the local governments, okay? We'll redistribute to them the amount of portion that will represent what they were collecting already. That's the constitutional, because you know there's two versions. There's the constitutional, that's the constitutional revenue sharing. And then, anticipating that change will happen, statutory revenue sharing was intended to make sure that the communities that grew and had new commerce would get a share of the sales tax also. Okay, now, that makes sense to you, makes sense to me, but nobody in Lansing even knows it happened.
Oh, my God.
And so they're not paying attention to it.
That's,
so they
that's term limits for you. Term limits. I'm people get there and they don't even know what the laws are.
I'm with you on that 100%. Yeah. So what happened is, you know, now they're saying, well, you know, this and that, and now they want to put everybody in on a per capita basis, which is exactly the opposite of what they want. Townships and everybody to get some of the revenue sharing, even if they aren't commercial centers. Now, there's no logic to that. That simply doesn't make sense. If it's an offset from sales tax, then it should be based somewhat on your proportionate contribution to collecting sales tax in the first place, providing the venue for it. So, you know, and I know this may be, your audience may want to go to sleep at this point, but it's really important to understand this, because it is what's fair. So my thing is, if you want to go on a per capita basis, add into it the people who come to the city every day for business, to work, all that. We have that data. Like in Dearborn, we have, you know, just under 100,000 people who live here. Mm-hmm. We have 172,000 people who, according to the census data, come here every day and spend time.
Shop and work. Mm-hmm.
So my point is, then use those data, that you have that data, use that data, which would be more in keeping with the intent of the original, you know, revenue sharing. And those are the things that
has this become a partisan thing? Republicans say no, 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 and Democrats say yes, yes, yes. I mean, that's always terrible for resolving a really objective answer.
Right. Well, what's amazing is almost everything is partisan now, which is why the PPD thing was so stunning, because there was only 2 no votes in the Senate and only, I think, 4 no votes in the House. So that was remarkable. It was the most bipartisan thing. But it's because everybody's on board. The Police Officers Association of Michigan, firefighters.
It's amazing,
Everybody was on board. Mm-hmm. But I'd like to see more of that.
Sure.
But here, you mentioned Headley. I'm going to give you an interesting thing. Everybody thinks about Headley as it capped the growth of taxes. That was one feature. There were other important things in Headley that the state has ignored, and I'm going to make sure I've done my research. Headley also said that the state could not impose any unfunded mandates on local government. Well, they have. Mm. And even a court ruled that, but they couldn't figure the remedy. Another element of Headley, which they've completely ignored, is Headley says that whatever the general tax collection of the state was in 1978, when it was before it was implemented, whatever was the percent of state revenue that was distributed to local governments and stuff, and that means schools, everybody local, could not be changed. Meaning they didn't say a fixed number. They said that the percentage of the total state revenue that was collected before Headley, that percent had to be maintained. It was a maintenance of effort that the state wouldn't start taking money away from local governments, because it didn't cap the state's capacity to have new tax. It only capped the local government. So it was a fair and balanced law, only the state has never done that.
Right.
The state has never tracked it. So they've been violating Headley from the beginning. And, you know, as mayor, I've been doing research to say, what's going on here? And I have some memory of this.
Well, there's certainly a problem. Obviously, I feel for the people who have pensions in Detroit that's in bankruptcy, of course. And I thought there was something in our Michigan Constitution that said that state pensions or pension plans are sacrosanct or something close to that,
well,
that they have
true.
To be continued. And a federal judge, or was it federal or just district, said, it's bankruptcy, so that's a different game of ball game. Well, you know, I'm kind of a libertarian in that, and I agree with you on the Headley Amendment, if that's what it says, because I hadn't heard that before, because nobody ever told me that before, is that Well, who is adjudicating this? It turns out that right now the Supreme Court of Michigan is primarily people, and this is just my opinion, but I think it's true, that are in the majority because they got money from the Republican Party. So they pretty much, because of that support for their campaigns to get them there, I think they're a little beholden, maybe only subconsciously, to Republican points of view. They were supported by the Republican Party funds. They must sort of agree with that. And so when a ruling comes up, is this constitutional or not in terms of the Michigan Constitution or the Headley Amendment, I think they just become partisan. I mean, rather than looking, I mean, if it's a law, if it isn't changed, they're supposed to enforce the law. They can't say, oh, there's, you know, we're just going to forget about that. And so, I mean, that's certainly one of the problems is when everything is politicized rather than people doing their jobs objectively for the way they were elected and trying to find the best solutions collectively. That's what you get into, my opinion only, of course. And this is WHFR Journal with Mayor John B. O'Reilly Jr. of Dearborn in our last 10 minutes of the hour. Got to tell you that this is Radiothon 2014, the once a year, only 1 week that we ask for your pledge of support to keep us going. Henry Ford Community College only pays a very small amount of our existence, just like the theater program and the music program and the campus newspaper and even our sports teams. We have to raise money in addition to that, and that's the real world. Everybody has to raise money one way or the other to keep going. So please consider a pledge of support. Call right now, and that's 313-845-9676. Option one, we've got people in Studio B here, which is our alternative live studio. We're all alternative everywhere, aren't we, to take your pledge. You can also go to whfr.fm. One person who called earlier, and I don't usually do this because I'm usually busy talking too much myself, and I hope this person gave a generous pledge. This will bring us into the question. I'll ask his questions here quickly of you about West Dearborn development and how that's going. And the question always comes up, it did in the last election, at least for a while, about paid parking in Dearborn, and West Dearborn especially. He raised these technical questions. If paid parking in Dearborn is enforced until 2 a.m., he says, well, other cities only enforce it until 9 p.m.
Yeah. It was just, again, to the revenue stream. I mean, paid parking was an issue. It went on the ballot because there were people who wanted to put it on the ballot because they thought the people of Dearborn would vote against it. But the people of Dearborn realized if they voted against it, then they'd have to pay the debt on those decks out of their own general fund.
The parking decks in West Dearborn. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But we have to run the system so as much as we can. Now, let me just give the facts. The total collection from the parking system, even at the current rates, and our rates are 75 cents an hour, which is very modest compared to most jurisdictions, but they don't pay the whole cost. So what happens is they pay a portion, then the tax capture for the West Dearborn Downtown Development Authority
there
pays
mm-hmm.
a portion, and then the city general fund pays $500,000. So the point is that we're still in court with Burton Katzman, but the company that was supposed to build
them, yeah.
the facility,
mm-hmm. yeah.
they were supposed to build what would the tax capture would have covered the cost. We would be having a whole different conversation. At this point, if they had built what they were supposed to build, we wouldn't have paid parking today. Mm-hmm. And so I'm trying to deal with it. We're trying to find ways to manage. I've got some ideas that I'm cooking around that I think we may get to.
Well, there was a new news story like this weekend, certainly, that I'll just briefly say that they're going to try, again, a pilot program with new smart meters to make it a little bit easier, and there'll be some reduced charges if you're parking a little bit further away. So those are all good things to try and see if that's going to affect things. How much more money do we have to pay off for the towers, or how much longer?
Oh, well, it's
the parking towers?
The debt is, I think, another 8 years that we have to pay. And like I said, right now it's sucking up general fund money, which is really not something that we want to do. And it doesn't allow the East Dearborn Downtown Development Authority much latitude because, you know, their revenues went down with the loss of property value. So so that's a challenge for them, too. So,
okay. Anyway. The other quickie question here, and this may be accurate or not, it says something about, in Dearborn, we don't allow cars to be parked after 2 a.m. That's what it says. Are we encouraging drinking and driving? I don't know.
No, I mean, actually, no.
I don't know what that
if
is.
You come the next morning, I mean, if you leave and go take a cab and come back, you'll pay just for that night the day before.
Hmm.
Because cars are left overnight, I know that.
I've
driven my own son, picked him up at his house, and drove him over to get his car.
Oops.
So I'm saying, hey, that's what I prefer. I'm one that says, hey, you can call me anytime if you feel it'd be better than you driving. So,
well, of
but,
course.
But still, my, my point is, you know, we're trying to be balanced, but we have to have a system. Say, if a car is exiting the next day, you know, and with certain lots, we leave the gates open even. So after 12. So mm-hmm. I mean, again, it just depends. But we're still working on it. I mean, right now, I mean, to be honest, all of us would like to get rid of paid parking if we can find a way, and we are working on some things that I think will have merit. But we, you know, up until that happens, we have to pay that debt. We have to pay that obligation.
I know there's nothing specific yet, but last week on this show, I should just update it anyway, there was a possibility of getting a grant from the state of Michigan to merge emergency dispatch services, and the latest press and guide says we got it.
We got
Well, Dearborn, Dearborn Heights, and Melvindale.
No, yeah, we got, well, Dearborn, we applied for it and got it for the,
right,
the whole thing.
For the
but here's the amazing thing is there was only $15 million in that pot, and we got $3.999 something. So just a shade.
Somebody didn't want to round it up, huh?
Yeah, I didn't want
Darn.
To round it. It looks better that way.
Okay.
But anyway.
Oh, we didn't give them $4 million. No,
yeah,
we didn't.
Yeah. So, but okay. But I'm just amazed because, you know, it really helps us because we're moving toward joint dispatch. We're upgrading the equipment. And this, and basically, that's going to pay for all the radios. That's a, like 90-some percent of that total is all going into radio equipment. That's the ones they wear here, the ones in the car, everything, but it's the upgrade. But that's the most costly thing.
Yeah, apparently there were discussions with Dearborn Heights and Dearborn somehow merging for this, but they're on a completely different technology.
Yeah. We were 400 megahertz, they were 8. Wow. And we, what we're going to, and the state of Michigan is moving very aggressively in this direction, is interoperability statewide, meaning
sure.
everybody can hear, talk to each other,
oh, yeah.
that
well,
that no matter where you are, and really upgrading this. And then, you know, with dispatch, I mean, if you think of the geography of Dearborn, Dearborn Heights, Melvindale, the point is that whoever's doing anything wrong or that we're looking for, I mean, they're moving through each of these cities. So it just makes sense for us, you know, this way, everybody who's in that police network will hear what's going on, even if it's just a block
so
away from them.
Police, fire, and ambulance services.
And
well,
so,
great.
And if you think about it, I mean, but it could be that I'm here in Dearborn Heights, and a block away, something's going on in Detroit, and I don't know about it because I'm not hearing that radio transmission.
But the exact details, I mean, they're still working out what they're going to do, and then they had to order equipment. But it's wonderful. I mean, it is a... One of those state programs, I think, is very useful. You could call it incentive programs, but it will save money and improve services for right. the local communities where it's quite appropriate. I wish there was more regionalism. I wish.
Yeah.
What about?
I'm for that.
Yeah, but what about Detroit Water? Real quick, I mean, can all like Wayne County and Macomb and Oakland all buy the Detroit Water Company and run it themselves collectively? Is that a crazy idea?
No, it's not a crazy idea. The crazier idea is what's going on right now. Macomb and Oakland and Macomb counties have put some money into looking at taking themselves out of the Detroit system and going into a separate system.
Oh, my goodness.
That would be catastrophic for the whole region because it starts splitting up something that has been unified, and it's gonna incur a lot of costs and so on. But the other thing is, you know, the hard part about this is just the fact that you've got all this infrastructure, but you also have these legacy costs and debts. And the question always becomes, who's going to absorb that? Who takes the responsibility for that?
Right. I don't know, but it's a one of the, I don't know who can oversee those things. All I know is that in certain areas of the country, cities that have expanded their own city limits way out, like Austin, Texas, I go to frequently, I think Los Angeles is this case, is that they're practically becoming the whole area, the whole region
right.
of metro transit, and there's tremendous efficiencies and economies to do that. Of course, in bankruptcy, it looks like they're just looking at the short term, how do we cut everything and just leave Detroit without any grand plan. It's too bad that the bankruptcy hearings can't be used as part of this planning for the bigger picture.
But I want to point out, because you raised this earlier, the bankruptcy is a federal court. They don't feel bound to state
I know.
Law. They don't feel bound to state law. I think they're wrong.
That's a shame.
Not just wrong. remember, the Constitution makes it clear. Under the states, what's the states? Under the federal, what's federal? The state has to have a justification for overriding our Constitution. I don't think they have it. So I think what we've got is a problem here where the federal judge is following what he believes is in the best interest according to federal law. I'm thinking federal law is, in fact, in violation of our local law, and that the feds don't have an overriding need to get rid of the, you know, the public pensions, mm-hmm. nor to force a sale. And here's the last part I'm going to say about it. Do you know who owns that system? Everybody who pays rates, everybody who pays for water and sewer. Oh. You cannot take money that's paid for water and sewer and divert it to any other use. You can't, you know, use it for anything else. How then can they sell that? Because it's the same standard. They can't sell it to anybody because it actually belongs to all the ratepayers who paid for it. So under law, this is kind of a really strange area. But I think that what we really need to do is test. I mean, if you bring up through the state courts and have the state Supreme Court rule in conflict with the feds, and then you've got an argument to say, where does the line between the federal interest and the state interest go?
We've been talking all hour with Mayor John B. O'Reilly Jr., and he's so full of information. I know we could go on for hours or have him back every week, but then we wouldn't have the other points of view here. So this is Radiothon 2014. Please call with a pledge of support. Blues for 4 hours is coming up with Joanne Kaye in just a few moments with a lot of special pledge incentives, but don't hold back. 313-845-9676. Option one, live studio. Two final things, Mayor. One is, have you seen or read this book? I'm sure you'll agree with its premise. I just discovered it.
It's yes,
been out since November.
I have the book.
Yeah, it's.
I don't want the job. I don't want the job though.
Okay. The author Benjamin Barber was interviewed on the Craig Folley Show, another local show on WDET that I always listen to because it's so great and informative about our area. It's entitled "If Mayors Ruled the World: Dysfunctional Nations, Rising Cities." And it just gives many examples about how the situations, I think especially in the so-called strong mayor type of government, is that if you have someone like yourself with your law background and a tremendous experience with civic organizations and city governmental agencies that's, you can actually get some things done a lot more quickly, especially you usually don't have the kind of political gridlock, even if there are warring factions in the city council. You don't have necessarily split Democrat-Republican.
No, in fact, we're nonpartisan, so we don't have that
officially,
at all. It's a non-issue, and it's, we could talk about that another time,
okay.
but that's something we have to think about.
And you're, just the last comment, I looked at your bio, and I hadn't read that you're an alumnus of Oakland University.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Go Grizzlies.
Yes.
Golden Grizzlies.
Yes.
I'm an OU graduate,
all
too.
Right.
See what great people graduate from Oakland University in Rochester, Michigan. Thank you for your time this hour. We're going to get started with our next show. And again, I always learn so much, and it's important, folks, to get your information not only from local newspapers, but as often as possible, talk to your elected representatives. And then you'll hear not only the latest information, but the full story. And you can't make a good decision without a little bit of time for that kind of research. Thank you for listening to New WHFR Journal. I didn't let John Conroy speak at all. Sorry, John. But you get the mayor afterwards.
Oh,
okay. You can bend his here in the other studio there. All right. So now it's time for Highway 61. It's WHFR Dearborn. Radiothon Pledge Drive, 313-845-9676.
We'll walk up.